if someone doesn't want to spend any money, they don't really want to change their diet, they're just like, what is the smallest thing I can do? I would say focus on chewing and mindful eating. That is so huge. And people brush it off thinking it doesn't matter. But if you have any digestive issues, slow down how you're eating. It's so hard in the world we live in. We're constantly scrolling, we're watching Netflix while we're eating. Just taking that sacred time, ideally 20 minutes a meal, and just focusing on your food, especially if you spend so much time cooking it, try to enjoy it. So that, if anything, if you're going to take anything from today and start with any type of gut improvement step, try that.
Did you know that what you eat can affect not only your gut health and overall well-being, but can also contribute to adult acne, skin conditions, and even disrupt mood and happiness? As our understanding of health and wellness continues to evolve, one area that's gained significant attention is gut health. The gut, oftentimes referred to as the second brain, plays a crucial role in our overall well-being, and not just when it comes to digestion and metabolism, but also when it comes to balancing hormones and enzymes, cutting cravings, and even affecting our outlook on life. Welcome back, athletes. I'm your host, Sherry Shaban, and with each episode, I am honored to be your coach and guide in the journey to fall in love with fitness and ultimately yourself. My intention in each episode is to help you release the old story of who you are and step into the one you are always meant to be. Through these conversations, together, we will step away from focusing on the doing and step into the being so that health and fitness is not just what you do, but who you are. In this episode, Dana Rasutis shares her journey from civil engineering to holistic nutrition and how she discovered the connection between gut health and skin issues. We discuss the importance of cleaning up the diet by cutting out processed foods and managing stress for optimal gut health. And if you're wondering about gluten and dairy, we also talk about the impact of both on gut health and the need for a personalized approach to diet and supplementation. Dana highlights the significance of gut testing to identify imbalances and create targeted protocols for healing. Now, before we dive in and meet Dana, if you're struggling with self-sabotaging behavior and other non-serving habits, I'd like to invite you to join me in Transformation in Paradise Metamorphosis Greece next year, October 12 to 19, 2024 in Lefkada. So let's get in touch if this sounds like something you'd like to be a part of, and go over all the details to answer your questions and determine if this retreat is the right fit for you. You can always email me at sherry@sherryshaban.com. We'll set up an appointment from there and then really make sure that we get all of your questions answered. And then, as I've shared on our previous episode, this January, I'm bringing back the 28-day Extreme Core Transformation Challenge. I'm going to be sharing registration details in the upcoming episodes, as well as all over my socials. And I have completely revamped this challenge with brand new workouts and additional content. This challenge is going to address gut health and offer an anti-diet approach to nutrition that you can continue to implement well after these 28 days. So if you've been suffering with gut health related issues, such as bloating and mysterious weight gain, and feel like your body could use a reset and release inflammation in the new year, then this challenge is for you. More details to come. Now, without further ado, let's meet Dana. Hi, Dana. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sherry. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited you're here. I love conversations around gut health. And what's super interesting is, in your case, Dana, you are a civil engineer turned health nutritionist, and I'm super curious how you've made that transition. So before we begin, and welcome again to the show, how did you go from engineer to nutritionist?
Yeah, I know, it's quite an interesting story. People are pretty surprised when they hear I was a civil engineer. So was a civil engineer, I was doing research mostly on agriculture. So I was really interested in plants and sustainability. So I knew I wanted to do something with that. And during graduate school, I found a love for health and nutrition. Mm-hmm. So it started as little experiments like making raw desserts for my research group, which nobody was into except me, but that's okay because I thought they were delicious. And just realizing that health was something that I was interested in, and especially food. So I thought, how about I combine my research in agriculture with food and work for restaurant sustainability. So I got into the restaurant scene, was really interested in that, Didn't really work out like I planned, but during that time, I was in my early 20s and I just wasn't feeling right. So I was doing all the right things. I was exercising. I was eating right. I was focusing on sleep, but my energy was horrible and adult acne started getting worse and worse. So I always had a little bit of skin issues, nothing really to complain about. But in my 20s, when your skin is supposed to clear up after hormones all balance out, it was getting worse and worse and worse. So I started experimenting with diet and I cut out a couple of things. I actually went plant-based and things seemed to improve. So I realized, oh my gosh, there is a connection between what we eat and things that appear on our face or on our skin or on our body or whatever it might be. So then I started even more diving into wellness, nutrition, and then found nutrition therapy and realized you can study this. So I became a certified nutrition therapist master, left civil engineering behind, and now I'm full force a nutrition therapist.
Wow, that's amazing. And it's so interesting because the more and more I get into this space, I realize that many of us who are in the service-based industry and really have this passion of helping people overcome major obstacles and struggles, it really was born out of our own struggles. And it's super interesting too, the moment you create that connection between what we eat and what happens in our body, it no longer is about calories in and calories out. And food then starts to be a completely different vehicle for health. And health now is not just how much we weigh, what our BMI is, what our percent body fat is. And so that's super, super interesting. And so one of the things that you mentioned is as you started to shift your diet, and of course, diet here, just being very specific, is what we're eating. It's not obviously the restriction around what we're eating. But when you started to shift your diet, Dana, you started to see your face start to clear up. And I'm curious, what was the connection for you? What was that thing that you shifted that suddenly cleared up your skin?
I suspect it was the dairy, just going more plant-based and cutting out things like dairy. And that is such a common trigger for acne, just because it can be inflammatory for people for all the different reasons. So that's what I suspect it was in the end. But I wish it was that simplistic of, oh, you cut something out and then your skin clears up. But there's so much in between. And that's what you study as a nutrition therapist. And that's what you help clients with. And for me, in the end, it was gut health. So the dairy was very likely affecting my gut health, probably my insulin levels, all sorts of other things. But until I figured out what was happening in my gut and got that balanced out, only then did my skin finally clear up.
Right. Yeah. And this is what I love about the conversation around gut health. And, I've had a lot of guests come on the podcast and share their perspective. And first and foremost, there's research constantly happening. So we're always learning new things. But then the other thing, too, is when it comes to gut health, there are so many variables. And so we may be a master at controlling one variable and helping, let's say, our patients overcome a particular issue around their gut, whether it's dysbiosis or they're seeing a lot of inflammation. But really, what's so important about this conversation is that as we open up all the other possibilities as to what is impacting the gut, I hope that the listener can walk away with some actionable steps. And, I shared with you, Dana, when we connected yesterday, it was a beautiful conversation, but I shared with you that I struggled from a lot of gut health issues around the time my mom was terminally ill. This was really her last months. And I had actually started transitioning my diet to support her. She had a hard time digesting meat at that time. And so she just wanted to eat simple foods, a lot of vegetables. The thought of meat or even eating any meat or chicken just was really, really upsetting her stomach. And so I started to support her by removing also animal products from my diet. And then because of all the stress that was going on at that time, I was in constant fight or flight. I was in constant protection mode, as I call it. I also started to notice a lot of changes happening in my gut. And it first started with bloating. And then all of a sudden, it was bloating the moment I started to eat. And now it was starting to impact my sleep. I would wake up with these massive bags under my eyes. I'd have a lot of joint pain. And then this just kept perpetuating. And it was so frustrating because I wasn't eating any processed food. I was cooking everything. I wasn't even eating out. I was super, super mindful of what the foods I ate was. And so it becomes really frustrating when you can't pinpoint that one thing. And then unfortunately, when I went to see my doctor about it and I asked her, well, can you issue me some sensitivity tests? Like, can I please find out what's going on? She just kind of diluted it down to, oh, it's just probably IBS and, try some elimination diets and see, maybe it's FODMAPs. And it was just a very, very vague explanation, unfortunately. And I had to really, really push her to give me a colonoscopy. And so the reason why this conversation is important is because we must become the advocate of our own health when we know that something is not right. And for me, it was all of a sudden, this is going on. I had never experienced it before. And that's why I kept pursuing it until I was able to resolve it. And then, of course, later I found out it was SIBO. So small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and then there was all these other layers of things going on. And so just curious for you, Dana, what would be the first step to take if, let's say, we know there's something not right, and we know that there must be something addressed, even if, let's say, the medical advice that we're receiving at the moment is not really bringing us towards those answers?
Well, I'd say it's tough with gut issues because, yes, digestive issues are often something that comes up first, but not always. Sometimes it could be completely unrelated to gut health, and some people feel completely fine. Their digestion is great, they have no complaints, but they're feeling like what you mentioned in your joints. You might be having horrible sleep, you might be having brain fog and trouble concentrating, and all these things. So, I mean, the first step would be to clean up the diet. So if you're eating processed foods, try to get them out. They're just full of all sorts of gut irritants, things like emulsifiers that disrupt our gut, sugar, carbohydrates that are highly refined. So none of that is good for your gut. So if you're in a place where you're getting issues, especially digestive issues, first step, cut out processed foods. Second step, stress management. And that is rough, especially what you mentioned in your situation, if that's out of your control and that is an extremely stressful time in your life. But stress really affects the gut. It leads to leakiness of the gut. So that causes inflammation. It reduces your stomach acid, which actually makes it really hard to digest proteins, which is interesting what you mentioned about your mom. Meat becomes hard to digest. If you don't have enough stomach acid, any type of higher protein food where stomach acid is really necessary to digest it, it's like in your stomach, like a rock, people say, like, I can't digest it. So that is a red flag. Could be related to stress, could be low stomach acid. So those are two things to start with, not even related to food at that point. But I mean, you could keep going down the line of all the things you could try.
Right. Yeah. And I'm always super curious because depending on who I'm speaking with, there's always kind of a list of these are the common irritants that disrupt, let's say, the gut membrane. And so is that true? Are there a list of common irritants? Because let's say when it comes to gluten, for example, we hear some people can tolerate no problem and maybe they have symptoms or maybe they're not aware of certain symptoms because they've just adapted to it. Or is it really possible that there are some of us who are sensitive and then others who are not?
Definitely. With any person having gut issues, I would say dairy and gluten are safe things to cut out because they're very common irritants, especially when the gut's inflamed. So you can very potentially get the gut healed up, work on your gut health, and then in the future be able to tolerate gluten and dairy again. But when the gut's inflamed, those are first things to cut out. So that would be my suggestion.
Okay, that's super interesting. And I also think that maybe in North America, the way that we are unfortunately growing our food, making or modifying our food and the proteins in our food, I think that that also is a really big trigger compared to maybe some place in the world where they're still eating naturally. And I don't know if you checked out that Blue Zone documentary on Netflix, but when you're seeing that really longevity is highly correlated with how we're moving and what is in our environment, and not just what is in our environment, but also what we're eating from our environment and how natural it is and how natural it is to obtain it, then I think this starts to give us more clues as to how we've actually disrupted the way that we receive food in North America. And so, what are your thoughts around that?
Oh, yeah. So I love that you bring that up because people love their gluten. They get very protective and they say, well, we've been eating gluten for generations. It's fine. It's been in our diet. It's not some kind of Frankenfood. The thing is, the gluten we're eating today isn't the gluten we ate even 100 years ago. It has been hybridized, modified. Even if it's organic, it can be naturally hybridized. So the plant we see today has been completely modified to withstand agricultural processes. So gluten used to be a small plant. It was very difficult to grow. It didn't taste as delicious. So wheat in general. So it's not the same plant anymore. And to our bodies, a couple decades, we're not able to adapt that fast. So for anybody who's consuming gluten, that can be something to think about. One option would be to potentially try to eat more of that ancient type of gluten. So wheat that's been around for many centuries. So not so much the modern wheat that we find in grocery stores, especially in processed foods, looking at those older varieties. So that could be one option. And for dairy, the way we grow our animals is not sustainable. It is not ethical. And what they're feeding, for example, cows, is full of hormones, antibiotics. So very likely that kind of dairy is going to cause issues. For some of my clients, they can tolerate raw dairy because it still has the enzymes in it. For some people, fermented dairy is okay, but milk as a liquid is not okay because fermented dairy will have those probiotics helping with digestion. So, yeah, there's a spectrum of what you can tolerate, but going back to if you have gut issues, start off by cutting out gluten and dairy.
Super interesting. Again, I have different guests coming onto the podcast. I actually have a guest coming up on the podcast who is going to be talking to us also about gut health. And super interesting because he actually leans more towards eating animal products to have optimal gut health. Then I've had someone else on the show who came on and he spoke about how you have to be 100% plant-based and really gut health is highly correlated with fiber. And so there's all this conversation around gut health, and just my personal perspective is we're all bio-individual. We all have to know what works for us. And again, when it just like when it comes to diets where we're very focused and keen on finding that one right diet that works for us, I think also when it comes to gut health, there isn't that one way to eat that is going to optimize gut health, especially considering where we've originated from, where our gut microbiome originated from in terms of evolution, and that we actually eat from off the land. And so whatever we've consumed generation after generation came directly from the land, and then the microbiome that was inherited generation after generation also reflected the environment. And so, what are your thoughts around that in terms of is there this optimal thing we're supposed to eat or foods we're supposed to eat for gut health? And then, what is your perspective also around animal products versus plant products for optimizing gut health?
Oh, 100%. You touched on so many good points. One thing, just to quickly mention, heritage is something to consider. So, where your ancestors come from, it's very different if you come from Mediterranean areas versus Northern Europe. So, that's also a good place to start. Kind of think about, well, what should I naturally genetically be eating? And shift to more of that. One diet will be more carbohydrates, certain fibers, more fruit. One will be higher in animal products. So, that's just something to consider. As for the plant-based versus animal product, I mean, like you said, everyone is bio-individual. There's no perfect diet. I thought there was many years ago, studying nutrition to figure out there definitely isn't. It's one thing, yes, fiber from a research evidence state is extremely important for the gut microbiome to make sure gut bacteria are flourishing. But the caveat there is if your gut is inflamed, fiber is going to be so painful to eat. So if you're struggling with gut issues, you know that if you try to eat higher fiber, you have beans, you have grains, you might have like that raw salad and you feel terrible. And yet you keep hearing, eat more fiber, eat more fiber. So that becomes really difficult on a plant-based diet because basically, every single food is high fiber. So, if I have plant-based clients, I talk to them and see would they be willing for a temporary amount of time to include more animal products, reduce the fiber so the gut can heal. And then, once your gut microbiome is balanced, then feed all the good bacteria so they can flourish. Animal products are, in general, easier to digest, especially because they're not causing as much inflammation. So, typically, that is a better diet, at least for a gut healing protocol.
Okay, super interesting. And so, how do we then determine what is optimal for us? So, I know you go through a series of testing, and this is again controversial because we receive all these this information from tests, and yet still we have to go with how we feel because the test might say something. We still might eat that food and still react to it. So, what is your perspective around that? And then what is also your process?
I really lean on gut testing. I have just found it really helps my clients, and we get results faster rather than shooting in the dark, guessing elimination diets, which can be really useful, but like you experienced, it's overwhelming. And with elimination diets, food sensitivities, it's not like an hour later you get bloating or you get a headache. It can be days later. So it's so hard to remember what you've eaten over the past couple of days. So I personally do really enjoy and I see results with sensitivity testing and gut testing, which is more stool testing. So the diet will really depend on what we find in the stool test results. And then, exactly as you mentioned, we tweak it to the client because we're not just going to create a protocol based on lab results without looking at the client history, the client symptoms. That's just not responsible. And that's not how you see results. You have to really match what do you see on the test results? What is the client experiencing? And then use your clinical knowledge to see, okay, this would be a good diet. These would be good supplements. These are priorities and lifestyle changes. Do we have to work on sleep? Do we have to work on getting morning light, cutting out blue light, whatever it might be? Each client is so different with how we go about their protocol, tweaking the diet, and then just recommendations that will work best for them.
Yeah, so beautiful. And I love how you just inserted, we check out sleep and we check out blue light and all these other things, again, because that's all encompassing our diet, right? Our diet is not just what we're putting in our mouth, but it's also how stressed are we and what are we watching on TV that may be triggering stress and what is going on in our environment. Like I shared, when I was suffering from gut health issues, I mean, that was a massive life experience. That was big, big life event. And so that, of course, highly impacts it. And super interesting also what you said in terms of food sensitivity, because food sensitivity, it's not just the kind of food, it's also the quantity of food. So we may feel okay eating just a small amount of broccoli, but then if we have a whole cup of broccoli, then that's where we can start to see the impact of that. Plus, if broccoli now was eaten with cauliflower and Brussels sprouts and other cruciferous vegetables. So it's super important. And that's why, again, the elimination diet tends to be super tedious. And then you feel like you're 3 steps forward, but then again, you're 5 steps back because was there onion in this food? And I didn't realize and control the onion. And so that's just the experience that I've actually observed, not just in myself, but also with the athletes that I work with. Just having that real tangible result will actually give you several steps forward and allow you to actually get to the problem much faster. And so, Dana, again, you talk about getting to the root cause of the problem, which is really important, because we see some specialists who just kind of put a band-aid on the solution. And I see the diet industry like this, that, for example, we may have an underlying unwanted eating behavior, and the issue around maybe our health or our weight gain is actually due to unwanted eating behaviors, such as stress eating or emotional eating and all these things. And yet we put a band-aid on it by trying to control the food and really trying to restrict diet and not really getting to the solution, because the solution really is getting to the root cause, which is the unwanted eating behavior. And so when it comes to gut health, what would be the root cause to that underlying symptom or side effect that we're always trying to cure? And why is it that a lot of professionals just tend to put that band-aid solution on it versus get to the root cause?
God, great question. So the band-aid solution, more conventional medicine, might be a medication. And
Right.
they give you a medication and it's like, okay, stay on this forever. So that's not a good solution, obviously. Another band-aid solution could be, well, change your diet and forever restrict these foods because they give you symptoms. That's also not sustainable. You shouldn't be having to avoid food groups. In a perfect world, I want my clients being able to eat a little bit of everything and
Right.
feel fine. So that's also not a band-aid solution, even though people might think, oh, well, diet is root to cause, that, oh, diet's the root cause. That's a solution. So what I see as the root cause is going to be what is truly imbalanced in the gut. So what do we see going on in there that's causing inflammation in the gut, that's causing inflammation in the whole body, that's leading to your headaches, that's leading to your PMS symptoms, that's leading to whatever it might be. So when I work with clients, running that stool testing to figure out what's happening, because we need to see what's happening in the gut. So that might be something like a parasite. It could be something like a yeast overgrowth. It could be your good bacteria are too low and your bad bacteria are overgrown. It could be poor detoxification. It could be so many things. And that's how the stool testing gives us direction, where we see, oh my gosh, okay, yeast is the problem. Let's adjust your diet temporarily just to make sure that the yeast doesn't overgrow. Let's get you on a supplement protocol for just a temporary amount of time. Get that yeast taken down, eradicate it, and then afterwards, let's get you back on a nutrition plan that you can eat everything in moderation and balance your plate and not have those symptoms anymore.
I love that. I love that the goal is really to bring those foods back in. And when I was at the peak of my suffering, I really believed that I had to remove some of these foods for the rest of my life. And so it's really amazing because you're like, oh my goodness, like I can't eat anything. Like anytime I eat this particular food, it just right away there's bloat. I'm not even done eating my plate and I'm already feeling uncomfortable and super full and something is already going on. And what's really amazing is after you calm that inflammation down and address the root cause, again, mine was SIBO, then I was able to reintroduce all of these things. And to your point, my goodness, a salad would destroy me. And that was like one of my favorite foods. And I was getting ready to like, okay, I guess I can't eat salads anymore. I guess I can't eat any raw veggies anymore. And so super interesting that you say that. And I'm curious, when it comes to inflammatory foods, and this again is controversial. So some of us may notice that we react to gluten as an example. But then every now and then we're like, well, I'll just have a little bit because a little bit will be okay. And so when it comes to these actual inflammatory foods that we're eating, is it okay to have a little bit, or is the impact of it actually lingering for weeks, and we're not really realizing that a little bit of gluten doesn't just last that meal, and the cause or the effect of it doesn't just last in just that little bit of period that follows after, but actually for weeks. And so, what is your opinion around that?
Gluten is an exception in the sense that it does linger. Like those reactions will stay in your system for months,
Oh,
potentially
wow.
for some people. So gluten's a very specific food. So if you know you react to gluten, truly avoid it. You know, keep it out of your diet, making sure that you tell people you're gluten-free. Restaurants avoid gluten. So that's one that's very important to avoid. I mean, if there are other foods you're sensitive to, if you're sensitive to certain foods, I would still say get your gut health checked out to make sure it's all sealed up. Because if your gut's healthy, it should be able to take a little bit of those insults and then recover. So it really depends on the person, but I would say gluten's the one that you want to be really particular about if you do find that you are sensitive to it.
Right. Yeah. That's super interesting, and again, really important to note that inflammation is just this cascade of events that happens in the body where the body is desperately trying to heal something that is not okay. And so that's why it's important again to note that it's not about what we're eating and how many calories and that's the value of the food, but really the value of the food is the impact or the effect that it does have on the body. And so let's say, for example, we were looking at two different issues. Let's talk maybe about SIBO and then leaky gut or dysbiosis. And so what would be the different symptoms of each of those conditions, and how would we be able to distinguish which one maybe we were needing to address? So how would we be able, for example, without testing, without doing the stool testing or the blood testing, just as a quick audit of there's something going on, how could we go down these symptoms and just check to see if we have them or not?
The tricky thing with gut stuff is it's really hard to know without testing,
Yeah.
which is why I like to incorporate testing because really your symptoms are genetically influenced. So for you, Sherry, maybe you get joint pain when your gut health is disrupted, which sounds like it was because you had SIBO. For me, I get acne. And so that's a way to know if your gut is flaring and if that inflammation is increasing, if you start to get your joint pain, if I start to get skin stuff. It's a sign. Oh my gosh, okay, there's something wrong. And whether I have SIBO, whether I might have leaky gut, really, in either case, I will likely, because of my genetic background, will get acne. But for those two conditions in particular, I would say for SIBO, it is a good thing to test those high FODMAP foods. So something like cruciferous vegetables, avocado, apples. If you find that certain fibers cause symptoms, that's very much a good gold standard reaction with SIBO. Leaky gut is that one is more overarching. Pretty much, if you have a gut issue, you have leaky gut. So, leaky gut is almost the first step of other problems developing.
Okay, that's super interesting. And one thing I had heard was SIBO, there's a reaction as soon as you eat. And then with leaky gut, the reaction is a little bit delayed. Is there any value around that?
Yes, definitely. I like that you bring that up because SIBO is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. And when we eat food, it first goes into our stomach, then it goes into our small intestine. So, definitely, oftentimes people with SIBO will have symptoms a little bit earlier, within about an hour of eating. Leaky gut could be those systemic symptoms, like you don't necessarily even get bloated or gassy. It's just, I have eczema, I have trouble concentrating, whatever that might be. And that could be a day, two, three later.
Right. Wow. Okay. That's amazing. Okay, so let's come back then to adult acne because you refer to this often, and I know also you have experience in that. And I'm just curious, when it comes to the adult acne and its actual correlation with gut health, is there a particular place that it appears? Because we see adult acne on the face or on the back and things like that, maybe even on the chest. And so is there a particular place that it's correlated with, or is it just depending again on that genetic background?
Yep, mostly depending on the genetic background. I mean, it's debatable. Some people will say if you have acne on your cheeks, that's more related to digestive issues, or if it's on your jawline and neck, that's more related to hormonal issues. But in the end, if you're having hormonal issues, it's likely a gut problem because your gut is really important for clearing hormones. So if your gut is an issue, you're going to get hormonal issues. So even if clients come to me with hormone acne or just PMS or cramps or something like that, the first thing we do is gut healing, and most of the time we don't have to do anything else because their hormones magically balance out. So again, depends. I mean, neck, chest also are common areas. Could be related also to detoxification, which I still consider in the realm of gut health. So depends on the person, but no matter what, I personally do the stool testing, figuring out what's going on there, and then that typically takes care of the acne no matter where it is on the body.
Right. Okay. So what I imagine is somebody comes to see you because suddenly there's all these new symptoms, things aren't aligning, maybe, following some of the symptoms that we've already shared and talked about up until now. And so they come see you, we go through a series of tests, we do stool tests, we do blood tests, and then from there we figure out exactly what's going on, whether it's more of a detoxification issue, whether it's SIBO or whether it's leaky gut. And then we start to create a protocol around which foods at the moment to avoid so that the gut heals and then slowly start to introduce things back in. And so I would also imagine that there are supplements that are suggested. And I think it's really important also to talk about supplements, especially when it comes to probiotics and prebiotics, because that I think sometimes is really, really misunderstood, especially when we talk about specificity and how important it is to make sure that whatever bacteria that we're ingesting to restore the gut health is also what we're missing. And so, what can you share around that, especially when it comes to probiotics? Is there value in just going to that best health food store that sells all the amazing probiotics, that's organic, that's vegan, that's gluten-free, and blah, blah, blah? Is there value in picking up probiotics there as opposed to, for example, being more specific around what would actually work for you?
Oh, great. Such a good question. So the problem with probiotics, what a company might do, let's say you buy it at a wellness store, they'll know that, oh, this strain is associated with this improvement and this strain is associated with this. So they'll put them together in a bottle, advertise that it does everything. It improves your IBS, it improves your headaches, it improves whatever else, and then they sell it to the customer. The problem is that they've never looked at how those probiotics interact between each other. And
Right.
that's what really needs to be done because they can oppose each other. They can completely negate some of those benefits. So if you're choosing a probiotic, you really want to go to a company that has done a ton of research and they've actually looked at the final product. How are those strains interacting? And then what does the actual final product do for the client? So that's not a common company. The companies I use for my clients definitely are those. They've done the research. They know that the probiotics are doing what the bottle says they're doing. So I would just say be cautious because very likely the companies aren't doing their due diligence. So it's not going to be the magic pill that it sounds like it's going to be.
Right. Yeah. And here's another thing, too, that I learned. So, depending on your health food store, especially if they're those big chain ones, they have a lot of associations with certain companies. And so, there's a featured product every single month or so, depending on what that product is. And so, you walk in, and the representative or the person who's assisting you in choosing the product will actually lead you to purchase that product that right now is being marketed or sold or offered by that store. And so it's super important again just to know where you're purchasing from, because you may be sold something that for them might actually equal to more commission if they sell more of this product. And so it's just something again to be cautious about. And so what it in terms of supplements, Dana, what would you say are some supplements that we can pick up that we might actually be able to find benefit from that we don't necessarily need to test for in order to actually start to use?
In general, I do love probiotics. So I put pretty much every client on a probiotic. Sometimes, if someone has SIBO, it might be hard. I really like spore-based probiotics in particular. They're really good for rebalancing the gut microbiome and typically very well tolerated by clients. So I would say that's a really safe one to try, just making sure that you're getting a good brand. So doing some research online, checking if the actual company is doing their research. So that would be a great option. Other supplements that I like clients on, oftentimes omega-3s, so fish oil. So just for, especially if you have gut inflammation, it's really shown to take down that inflammation. That's pretty safe to take for everyone, regardless of conditions, health status. So that's a really good one. Other ones, not necessarily directly related to gut health, but vitamin D3 plus K2, but making sure that you're checking your vitamin D levels, especially with right now we're in winter time. So you want to make sure that your vitamin D levels are sufficient. So those are just a couple off the top of my head that I like clients on often.
Yeah, so good. I agree with all those too. I also add vitamin C in winter. I also add a little bit of zinc. So those are generally the supplements that I take, and it's just I'm aging and I just want to make sure that bone health is addressed as I do age gracefully. And so, Dana, this was a beautiful conversation, and as we wind it down today, I'm just super curious if you had anything else you wanted to share that you didn't have a chance to just yet.
I mean, one tip, if someone doesn't want to spend any money, they don't really want to change their diet, they're just like, what is the smallest thing I can do? I would say Focus on chewing and mindful eating. That is so huge. And people brush it off thinking it doesn't matter. But if you have any digestive issues, slow down how you're eating. It's so hard in the world we live in. We're constantly scrolling, we're watching Netflix while we're eating. Just taking that sacred time, ideally 20 minutes a meal, and just focusing on your food, especially if you spend so much time cooking it, try to enjoy it. So that, if anything, if you're going to take anything from today to start with any type of gut improvement step, try that.
Wow, that's so good. So good. So simple and actually so spot on. So Dana, if somebody wanted to reach out and connect with you, where could they go to do that?
My business is Table to Crave, and that would be my website. That's also my Instagram handle. I'm relatively active on Instagram, so those are the best ways to find me. And I also have a weekly newsletter that I send out that you can subscribe to either way through my Instagram or through my website. And that just includes recipes, tips, especially focused on gut health, skin health. So if you're interested in any of that, that's a really good way to just stay in touch.
Amazing. We're going to add that all to the show notes. Thank you so much for your time today, Dana. I love this conversation.
Thanks, Sherry. It was such a fun one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fall in Love with Fitness. Whether you're already on your fitness journey or just getting started, we're in this together. Just head on over to iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review, and you'll be entered into the drawing to win my 6-week transformation course. Then go to fallinlovewithfitness.com and get your free gift from me so you get back your energy and reinvigorate your life. Join me on the next episode, and remember, you are an inspiration.